You're listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Linda Bordoni. When Vatican Radio's Sean Patrick Lovett asked adolescents from South Sudan, crowded in desolate refugee camps, whether there was anything he could do to help, they said, "Tell people about us. Tell people that we are here and tell the Pope. Tell him that what he says is important." Lovett, director of Vatican Radio's English programme, was in northern Uganda at the invitation of two Ugandan bishops who run local radio stations in the northwest of the country. Together with a small team of communications experts, Lovett was there to share experience and give training workshops in radio to over 60 professional journalists and technicians. "We taught them as much as we could in terms of radio production," he says, "and learnt as much in the opposite direction. But what was most moving and most enriching in terms of humanity," he says, "was witnessing firsthand the dramatic reality of tens of thousands of women, children and adolescents who have fled their homes because of conflict and are now holed up in desolate camps, far from the eyes and the minds of the world."
Vatican Radio is 83 years of age. She's the grandmother of radio stations. And like any good grandmother, she's ready and willing to share her knowledge and her experience with her younger brothers and sisters. And that's exactly what we were doing in Uganda. We went down to Uganda at the invitation of two bishops, the Bishop of Arua and the Bishop of Lira, who run their own radio stations, diocesan radio stations, that cover a huge area in the northwest of the country. And we were down there to share our experience. We gave training workshops in radio to over 60 professionals, 60 journalists and technicians. We helped them set up a new website. We taught them as much as we could in terms of radio production and learned as much in the opposite direction. One of the things that I learned that I would love to put into practice here was what they call rural debates. They take the radio out into the countryside, into the villages, and they give people an opportunity to speak openly about issues that are close to them. They help people to articulate their issues, their problems, their ideas in an open forum, which then they rebroadcast to those same areas. And I often think, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do something similar?
Your experience was with radio primarily, but it also took you into the country and into contact with realities that we don't hear about.
One of those realities, the one that struck me personally very deeply, is the reality of refugees. We work with information, with news here every single day. We've been talking for years now about the situation in South Sudan. We follow conflict situations, struggles and wars all over the world. It's one thing to read about it or to see pictures of it. It's another thing to stand there in the middle of the mud and slush and filth and look around you and see and experience and hear the suffering that these people are going through. To be fair, one has to say the institutions do what they can, but the situation is so vast, it's so out of control, there's a limit to what a government or humanitarian institution can do. The Ugandan government makes available pieces of land and then essentially says, right, you're on your own. People live in a limbo, in a no place. It's a non-place. They can't go back to where they came from. They can't go forward. And they just have to be where they are for as long as that's going to be. But they have nothing. And I mean, less than nothing. Most basic foodstuffs, clean water, health care, education, the things that we take for granted every single day, they have nothing. You go into a refugee camp, and my image of the refugee camp is at least some tents, or no tents. You're given the space, and then you cut down the trees, and you make your little makeshift hut. That's how you. And then you dig a hole until you find water, and you put a pump. Someone comes in, UNHCR or Oxfam or some humanitarian organization comes in and helps you to build a well, and that's the well that has to serve 2,000-3,000 people. In the camps, there are small children, women, and teenagers. The men aren't there, of course, because they're either dead or they're fighting. The children are children. They're beautiful. They're resilient. They bounce back. You give them a piece of string, and it becomes their toy for days on end. the children gather up the mud and they create their own little trailers and carts and people and play for hours under the trees. The women get up at the crack of dawn and go and collect water and firewood and build fires to cook whatever they have for the children. When they're not doing that, they're washing, they're cleaning, they're building their huts. They're so busy, they're so occupied. What hurt me and touched me were the young people, the adolescents. There are very few old people in the camps because old people can't run. And you have the adolescents, with all their adolescent issues, sitting there looking into space with nothing to do. They don't know how long they're going to be there. The one camp I visited, they had one book in English that they were passing amongst themselves, one to the other. And it's a book of English idioms, as quiet as a mouse, as happy as a clam. And they look at you and they say, "What is a clam?" That's all they have. That's all they have to study with. But for them, it's vitally important because that book is what's going to allow them to know English, and they know that when they leave the camp, which they will sooner or later, they're going to need English, and it's their point of reference and their motivation for while they're there.
When you came back from Uganda, you said you'd been into a few refugee camps, and I was surprised. I work with this kind of issue every day. I had no idea there were refugee camps in Uganda. So you're speaking about no man's land, but you're also speaking of no people's people. Who are these people? Why don't we know about these camps?
They say refugees are invisible wherever they are. They're particularly invisible in the northern part of Uganda. They're coming in mostly from South Sudan. The Arua area was where Idi Amin was from, so it was a particularly devastated area in the 1990s when you had the lashback after Idi Amin fell and you had the tribal wars and the guerrilla and the civil war happening in that area. And that was the area where Joseph Kony operated as well, where he was abducting children. It's right on the border with Congo, you see, and there are no border posts. There's a road that divides Congo from Uganda on the west, and then just a few miles to the north you have South Sudan. So it's a merger point where people are coming in from those two areas, Congo and South Sudan. According to the Ugandan Red Cross, there are 60,000 South Sudanese refugees. Right now, those are the figures from a few days ago. Those who can count, because one doesn't know, because the area is so vast, they're coming in on an average of 150 people per day. And yes, I mean, the government does what it can. The humanitarian organizations do what they can. But the problem is so out of control. In the Lugbara language, which is the language for northern Uganda, it's interesting, there is no word for hope. You can't translate the word hope. You live for the present. You subsist. You do what you have to do to get through today. In one of the camps I was in, there was a woman who had a bullet in her leg. She just arrived. And they had to carry her 8 kilometers to the next camp because there was a healthcare center there where they could try and do something for her. They're really afraid of the rains, which are about to arrive, because the rains just wash everything out. And as there are no sanitary structures, there are open latrines, which mean that you have all sorts of muck floating through the camp, and malaria is rife. They're lacking basic medicines. Everything. Name it, they don't have it.
You said there's no word for hope. What is there for these people?
It's this no person's plus no place that they live in. They don't know how long they're going to be there. They could be there for years. But of course, there's no electricity, no newspapers come in there. No, their one contact with the outside world is either through the Catholic catechists, because parish priests are too few and far between. A parish priest, it takes him maybe 4 or 5 weeks to get around his parishes. So everything is conducted by the catechists. The catechists are extraordinarily energetic, vital, courageous people who are the spokes. They end up being the spokespeople for the refugees, regardless of their religion. their only contact with the outside world is the radio. Small transistor radios, battered transistor radios with a piece of wire coming out the back as an aerial. That's all they have to tell them what's going on in the country they've come from, or to give them some sense of being part of a wider world. And it's not just about information and news, it's about consolation and encouragement. And one of the eye-openers for me was to hear Vatican Radio's programming. Our Vatican Radio programs from the English Africa section are rebroadcast on the local radio stations and are listened to by the refugees in their camps. And here we sit in our offices and we put together our little news pieces and we put them up on the website thinking we're doing such important work. And there, one word becomes so important to people. It gives them that the hope for which they cannot find a word, because it reminds them that there are people out there who can hear them. And when I asked some teenagers in the camp, was there anything I could do? They said, yes, tell people about us, which is why I'm so grateful to be able to do this. Tell people that we're here and tell the Pope. They know who the Pope is because they listen to Vatican Radio broadcasts, and tell the Pope that what he says is important, and that if he keeps saying how important it is to find peace and stability in Sudan, sooner or later someone will listen and maybe we can go back home.
Thank you very much.